The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. For the second segment, we'll be talking about, it's like an extension, I guess, on yesterday's study about just thinking differently. You'll recall yesterday we talked about Herbert Armstrong and how he blazed a trail for us with radio, and not just radio, but TV, and raising up a college in support of the work and all those programs for young people, the youth magazines, the youth camps, and so on. And he really did. He really did remind God's people continually that we're here to teach the world. We're here to proclaim God's truth, to live this way of life. So we'll look more at that subject in the follow-up study, the follow-up to yesterday's study. Well, speaking of yesterday's program, I also referred you back to the article I've mentioned over and again, America Has Been Fundamentally Transformed. We talked about the communist infiltration and how that Bernie Sanders is proof of just how far they have gone into the American political system, certainly the educational system, the system of entertainment, all of those, the left has made dramatic advances and rapid advances in all of these fields. And it's building toward a catastrophic clash. And you see the two sides, and they're digging in their heels regarding the communist goal to overthrow the government. Mr. Armstrong, he said back in 1962, if it could do this peaceably at the polls, it would, but it knows it can't. So it does stand for the violent overthrow of the United States government. If it could do it at the polls, you think of the Bernie Sanders supporter, that clip we played a few weeks ago, that if he doesn't win, then we'll take to the streets. That's the thinking. That's the mentality. Now, as my father brought out in that recent Trumpet, for quite a while, they actually were having success at the polls, certainly during the Obama years. Here was an individual who, in his younger days, he bragged about hanging out with the Marxist professors, wrote that in his book. Of course, he was brought up at the feet of Frank Marshall Davis, another communist. And then, as I say, you see Bernie Sanders, a proud communist. He might use different words today, but look at his thinking, look at his ideology. Well, they were having great gains for quite some time until 2016, and now you see them lashing out in desperation. Now you see them continually attacking and attacking, and they're worried now. They're worried they're going to lose again. My father says, never have we seen a more bitterly divided America, and this man who fundamentally transformed America caused much of this division. He almost destroyed America's constitutional republic. It says, never have we seen such hatred between American people. We haven't seen it like this. As I said a week or two ago, and we're just now getting into, with our book club reading on Lincoln, we're just now getting into the start of the Civil War. It's going to be a fascinating study as we think about what's happening to the United States today, 160 years on from the Civil War that brought so much death and destruction, hundreds of thousands of people from the North and the South. America's children slaughtered in so many of those battlefields in the South, well, all over what was then the United States of America. But this PJ Media piece, just listen to the title. Here they go again. Pelosi to launch a new investigation into Trump. We're still talking about the other one that just ended. And now they're set to begin the process yet again. We thought it was behind us. We thought, well, finally we can move on. Well, I think most people, though, most people probably thought, well, this would happen again. But this soon? Maybe it'll happen again in the second term of Donald Trump. But this soon, right now? A week or two later? Really? It says, but Nancy Pelosi is hot under the collar about Trump, Donald Trump tweeting about the absurdly long sentence that deep state prosecutors suggested for Roger Stone. The president tweeted out a storm of criticism when the news broke that prosecutors were recommending 9 years in prison. As some commentators have said, you have child rapists that are sentenced to fewer years than that. But these Obama prosecutors, and that's what they are, they want Roger Stone to rot in jail because of his connections to Donald Trump. And so when the news of that recommendation came out Monday, well, the president took to Twitter and he said it was horrible and very unfair. He said it was a miscarriage of justice. He said the real crimes are on the other side. And yet nothing happens to them. And that is exactly the truth. The real crimes, we're talking about criminals. We're talking about a criminal enterprise that's about to launch yet another investigation, perhaps another impeachment, perhaps another trial. PJ Media says, keep in mind that child rapists get an average of 3 to 7 years in prison. Think about that. 3 to 7 years for a child rapist. And here comes Roger Stone, who, well, I guess he's committed crimes for sure, but he's a first-time offender. They're white-collar crimes. 9 years. 7 to 9 years. And keep in mind, too, that the president is commenting on a sentencing recommendation. And that's all the DOJ can even do in front of a judge. Ultimately, it's the judge's decision. And if the judge wants to disregard the recommendation, he or she will do that. But President Trump was upset that his own Department of Justice would recommend something that severe. And so, as I say, he takes to Twitter and he exposes just how fraudulent, how lopsidedly unfair this whole system of justice is. All of these prosecutors are former Obama people. All of them are Mueller people. All of them. The case was brought on by Mueller, and he's since gone from the scene, and they're continuing with it. And remember, this is a case, the Mueller investigation, that started with the dirty dossier, fake documents, Russian disinformation. They used that to launch this investigation into Donald Trump, a political opponent. And then they falsified these FISA warrant applications. They used these lies. They knew they were lies. We now know this because of the Horowitz report. They used these lies to then lie to the FISA court so that they could illegally spy on the president and his campaign. It's just like the president said, the real crimes are on the other side. He's going up against a lot of criminal activity, a lot of criminal behavior. And yet look at how the press just continually hound him. You're not contrite following the impeachment trial. You haven't said you're sorry. You haven't confessed yet. Listen to this reporter yesterday badger him about how that He should have learned a few lessons from the impeachment trial. Clip one.
Lisa Murkowski earlier said that you shouldn't have gotten involved with the Roger Stone case. She said it's just bad. Some Republicans have said they hoped you would learn a lesson from impeachment. What lesson did you learn from impeachment?
That the Democrats are crooked. They've got a lot of crooked things going. That they're vicious. That they shouldn't have brought impeachment. And that my poll numbers are 10 points higher because of fake news like NBC, which reports the news very inaccurately, probably more inaccurately than CNN, if that's possible.
It's something to behold. He stands up to them. He puts it right back on them. No wonder. No wonder people in New Hampshire lined up in the cold dreariness of, what was it, Tuesday, Monday? They lined up 118,000 of them to vote for, forget about the Democratic primary, they lined up to vote for Donald Trump. And he's not even running against anyone. There's people that see just how horribly unfair this is, how one-sided it is, how partisan it is, how that the previous administration, he weaponized all these agencies, and they won't stop. It's a war. It's an all-out war to destroy this president. Andy McCarthy says the first thing to grasp about the Roger Stone sentencing fiasco is that Stone, even accepting the worst plausible gloss on his crimes, is a 67-year-old nonviolent first offender. So again, no one's saying he's innocent, but he's a 67-year-old nonviolent first offender. And the Democrats, keep in mind, they scream for criminal justice reform, for sentencing reform. They want sanctuary cities for illegal immigrants to get away from the law. They love catch and release. Catch them, but then you got to release them. And then if they don't show up for their trial later, well, that's okay. They'll just blend into the system. They'll just blend into society. They're working overtime to let hardened criminals out of jail. But now they're very strict. Now, because of the association with Donald Trump, they want him to go away for 9 years, even more if possible. They want to see him rot in jail. They want to see this 67-year-old die in jail because he encouraged Donald Trump to run for president years ago. It says, so the left has a quandary here. Do they hate Trump more than they love sentencing reform? Well, there's an obvious answer to that. Trump trumps everything, right? They're all for sentencing reform until it comes to putting away anyone associated with Trump. Then it's go to the slammer, go to solitary confinement if you're Paul Manafort. And then throw away the key. It says we could have predicted the decision to go with hating Trump and thus fomenting outrage over DOJ's retraction of its original sentencing recommendation of about 9 years imprisonment, now slashed to a far more reasonable range of 4 years or less. So they went back. The DOJ went back. I think this was late Tuesday night. You had the big fiasco on Monday, and then President Trump sends out the tweets. The DOJ, not long after that, says, hey, this is not right. They lied to us. They misled us, these prosecutors. We were under the impression it was going to be a recommendation for much less than 9 years. So they went back Tuesday night, after, of course, the prosecutors made the big show. We're resigning in protest. The DOJ went back and said, look, we recommend 4 years or less. It says here in Andy McCarthy's piece, with Mueller's shop closed down, the Stone prosecution was run out of the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia, but it was still being overseen by two Mueller staffers, Aaron Zelensky, and Adam C. Jed. Zelensky, it says, worked for Rod Rosenstein. And Adam C. Jed was an appellate lawyer from the Obama Justice Department. It says also assigned to the case were Jonathan Kravis, a former associate White House counsel to, guess who? Barack Obama. Nevertheless, it says the DOJ made it known that the sentencing memo would be rescinded and a new one filed. That announcement prompted the recusals of all four prosecutors, some of whom are quitting the DOJ entirely, and some apparently just stepping aside from the Stone case. So they're stepping aside or resigning in protest. And then the media, of course, immediately side with them. Donald Trump is colluding with Bill Barr. Donald Trump is influencing the DOJ to go one direction or the other. Blatant hypocrisy. We'll get to that in just a second. Here's the president yesterday answering a reporter who asked about, well, are you going to pardon Roger Stone? Clip two.
Are you considering a pardon?
I don't want to say that yet, but I tell you what, people were hurt viciously and badly by these corrupt people. And I want to thank, if you look at what happened, I want to thank the Justice Department for seeing this horrible thing. And I didn't speak to him, by the way, just so you understand. They saw the horribleness of a 9-year sentence for doing nothing. You have murderers and drug addicts. They don't get 9 years. 9 years for doing something that nobody even can define what he did. Somebody said he put out a tweet, and the tweet, you based it on that. We have killers, we have murderers all over the place, nothing happens. And then they put a man in jail and destroy his life, his family, his wife, his children. 9 years in jail, it's a disgrace. In the meantime, Comey walks around making book deals. The people that launched the scam investigation, and what they did is a disgrace. And hopefully it'll be treated fairly. Everything else will be treated fairly.
That's the president yesterday. These media journalists just badgering away. You remember how they arrested him. I think they brought out the state militia or the Army Reserves to take down Roger Stone, the 67-year-old. Remember that? And remember how CNN was in collusion with him? The CNN cameras were right there in the early morning hours, 5, 6 a.m., I think. Unbelievable. They can divine all of these villainous motives. They are sure that the villain is Donald Trump. And Bill Barr's a close second. And this is unprecedented. Nothing like this has happened. Look at this montage from Newsbusters. This is how they covered it yesterday. Clip three.
President Trump is testing the independence of the Justice Department, thanking his attorney general for taking charge of the case of his longtime friend Roger Stone in an attempt to keep him out of jail. It's a highly unusual move for the president of the United States to lash out at career Justice Department lawyers involved in such a case.
The Justice Department insists there was no coordination with the White House. But this morning, the president congratulated Barr for his involvement.
Attorney General William Barr ought to be ashamed and embarrassed and resign.
Democrats charge Barr with enabling an abuse of power.
I have formally requested that the Inspector General of the Justice Department investigate this matter immediately.
President Trump tonight seething, insisting he did not interfere in the criminal prosecution of his longtime ally, Roger Stone.
Isn't your tweet political interference?
No, not at all.
Democrats have now called Attorney General William Barr to testify about the president's influence over the Justice Department, and you learned tonight that Barr has accepted?
Yes, and look, you know, both the White House and the Justice Department have said that the president had absolutely no involvement in this decision to overrule prosecutors in the Stone case, even though it came within hours of the president's tweet. But this will be a very contentious hearing, David. After all, there are questions now raised about the politicization of the Justice Department and the independence of the Attorney General.
Where do you even start with all that? First, Nora McDonald, she was the first one to go. She said that the attorney general was taking charge of this case in an attempt to keep him out of jail, the attorney general, his department, recommended Tuesday night. This report was from yesterday, Wednesday. The DOJ went in there and said, 9 years is too much. It's insane. We're recommending 4 years or less. And Norah McDonald reports that he's trying to keep Stone out of jail. And then you carry on with all the other reports. Well, they're career Justice Department lawyers. They've been in the Justice Department their whole lives. You can't question their integrity. Trump, on the other hand, is seething. He's going after them. There's charges of political interference. What are they not interested in? The serious questions revolving around the prosecutor's conduct. If the prosecutors went to the DOJ, if they went to the top brass at the DOJ and said, here's what we're going to do, and then they went in front of that judge in the court and did something or said something entirely different, there's a serious case of unethical misconduct. They're not interested in that at all. Chuck Todd, he's wondering if we ought to consider how we even appoint individuals like William Barr, since in his mind it's so politicized. Clip four.
Are we at the point where we cannot trust a political appointee to be in charge of justice? Do you think we have to change the way we do this, create more of a CIA, FBI, Federal Reserve approach to appointments for attorney general, figure out some distance from the executive branch of some sort?
If Donald Trump appoints him, then you can't trust the process. We've got to figure out some other way to do this. Never mind that these agencies are an extension of the executive branch. It's amazing. So many of these agencies aren't even mentioned in the Constitution, but the president certainly is. Listen, I think it's later in my notes, but listen, is it six? Yovanovitch? Listen, this is the former, what was it, ambassador to Ukraine? She's the one that hated Donald Trump. Hated him with a passion. And Donald Trump went in there and fired her. And remember the House impeachment? Oh, she won so much sympathy from the Democrats. How could he fire her? She's a career diplomat. She's been there her whole life, her whole adult life. How could Donald Trump come in and prefer to have someone who's more of a supporter of his thinking, his policies? That's the way these people think. Here's clip six.
Right now, the State Department is in trouble. Senior leaders lack policy vision, moral clarity, and leadership skills. The policy process has been replaced by decisions emanating from the top with little discussion. Vacancies at all levels go unfilled, and officers are increasingly wondering whether it is safe to express concerns about policy, even behind closed doors.
She says the policy process has been replaced by decisions emanating from the top. From the top, with little discussion. In other words, if you have a president that comes in and disagrees and says, look, I want to do it this way, and I want to have my ambassador, just like Obama did, just like every president does. And yet she's there now with her posh job at Georgetown saying that I can't believe that a president would go against the radical leftist consensus. They are coming at him from every angle. And just when you think, finally, this is over and we can move on and talk about some other topics. Well, we have done quite a bit of that in the last couple of weeks. But here we are again, just like that headline at PJ Media. Here we go again. Eric Swalwell in the House, he's saying, look, Nancy Pelosi has said this. Gerald Nadler, he's indicated this same thing. It's going to be another round. Here's Swalwell saying yesterday how we can't rule out impeachment. Of course. Clip five.
Might you impeach him over this, over Roger Stone and the sentencing?
You know, we're not going to take our options off the table. We don't wake up in the morning wanting to impeach him. You know, we want to work with him on prescription drugs, background checks, and infrastructure. But we're not going to let him just, you know, torch this democracy because he thinks that he's been let off once and we're not going to do something about it.
Of course, Jake Tapper there is helpfully giving him the lead, saying, well, could you impeach him over this Roger Stone thing? The tweet? The tweet about the recommendation? It's as insane as the conversation with the Ukrainian president. The suggestion, you know, you might want to investigate this. That's impeachable. Well, this is an unfair recommendation. That's impeachable. When will it stop? And of course, once again, and you could write this same chapter every single time this happens, President Trump's being accused of doing what Barack Obama did all the time. All the time. The Federalist, it says here, I can't help but think how different the reaction would be if President Obama intervened in a case and decided to cut a prison sentence short. Hypothetically speaking, let's say someone was convicted of espionage, spying, and had his 35-year sentence reduced to 6 years by President Obama. Oh, wait, no need to speak in hypotheticals. That happened. See Chelsea Manning. That happened on the way out. And that's just one of many examples where Obama's DOJ, they fell right in line with Obama's thinking. Hillary Clinton's perhaps the best example of all. She tweeted out yesterday, two prosecutors have resigned from the DOJ. Here again, the prosecutors are the heroes. It's the same exact strategy, which makes all of us here think immediately. It's another setup. It's just like Vindman. It's just like the whistleblower. It's just like the setup for the Mueller investigation. It's Comey all over again. He's got to get the memos, and then he's got to leak them, and then he's got to work in collusion with the New York Times. And then Rod Rosenstein, like I covered yesterday, he's got to be calling Eric Holder. He's got to be touching bases with all these Obama people. And then the Obama people, they just praise and stroke their vanity. Oh, you're doing great, Mr. Rosenstein. Oh, I'm really proud of you, Sally Yates. You stood up to him. He's the tyrant. He's Adolf Hitler. We've got to destroy him. And everyone associated with him. Hillary Clinton says two prosecutors have resigned. They've resigned from the DOJ in protest to the administration's intervention to lighten the sentence of one of Trump's accomplices. She says the rule of law and our democracy are in crisis. Just a total and complete lack of self-awareness. The rule of law. This is a woman that was operating an illegal server. She was dealing in classified information from her house on her personal server. And then when she's called to give a response to this charge, and to turn over the evidence, she destroys it. She destroys it. She takes a hammer to the cell phones, or her people do. They use bleach bit to scrub the servers. And what did Obama say in the early part of 2016? Well, she didn't intend to do anything illegal. She was just a little bit careless. We all agree on that. This was before the investigation was done, remember? James Comey, he drafted the exoneration letter before they even interviewed her. It was a done deal. She was certainly not going to be indicted. And they all knew it. And Obama was on national TV. He was basically tipping his hat to all of the people in the DOJ and all of the people in the FBI, saying, look, I'm the president of the United States. She served her country. She didn't have any evil motivations. It's impossible. She's a Democrat. And then you look at Eric Holder, He tweeted yesterday, "Do not underestimate the danger of this situation. The political appointees and the DOJ are involving themselves in an inappropriate way in cases involving political allies of the president. This affects the rule of law and respect for it." He says it's unprecedented. Eric Holder, of all people, this is the self-proclaimed wingman of Barack Obama. The blatant hypocrisy here is just staggering. Eric Holder, of all people, lecturing the United States about politicizing the Department of Justice. PJ Media says nobody went to jail for Fast and Furious, where our BATF sold guns to Mexican cartels that were then used to kill an American border agent. Not one government official served one day of prison for that. Eric Holder was charged with criminal contempt for withholding evidence, but the Obama administration and the DOJ refused to prosecute him. Says Matt Margolis has that scoop today and four other instances where Obama protected his allies from justice. We live in a country with two systems of justice, one for the elite swamp dwellers and one for everyone else. This cannot continue. See, that's what President Trump is exposing. He's exposing the corruption. Whether or not it'll ever swing back to the point of being more fair and just remains to be seen. But he's at least calling attention to it, which is why they hate him all the more. But you look at how this transpired. Four prosecutors with all of these ties to Obama and Bob Mueller. They're carrying out the wishes of the Mueller investigation. Remember, that investigation caught all these people in process crimes, misstatements, a tweet here that contradicted with this. And the whole investigation was fraudulent. It was based on Russian misinformation that was purchased, that was bought by Hillary Clinton, and then used by John Brennan, and then used by the DOJ under Obama to illegally spy on American citizens. And then they lied to the FISA court to continue doing it. Four different applications. So this time around, how do they do it? These four prosecutors, they go to this judge and they say, 9 years, judge, we recommend 9 years. They knew what kind of reaction that would generate at the DOJ. They knew how President Trump would respond to that. So he tweets out, the DOJ then has a response a little after that. And here, all four of them, they make a big show. We're stepping down in protest. They know they'll have the whole media on their side. They know Chuck Schumer will rush to the mic and demand an investigation. They know that Nancy Pelosi will do the same thing. The Federalist says, is this revised recommendation unusual? Absolutely, I won't deny that. However, CBS News reported that the DOJ was shocked at the recommendation and wasn't briefed in that direction. In other words, these prosecutors misled them. These prosecutors lied to them. The higher-ups at the DOJ, that is. But that's not the story. You listen to the montage, you read Hillary Clinton's tweet, and these prosecutors, all four of them, above reproach, their integrity cannot be questioned. They have worked their entire careers for the government. Well, it says here, shortly thereafter, in dramatic fashion, the four assistant U.S. attorneys who prosecuted Stone's case resigned. It was all a dramatic show. All coordinated, I'm sure. Carefully coordinated with the Democrats, with their allies in the media. Another wicked plot by the radical left. Another wicked plot by the deep state. fundamentally transformed. Gerald Nadler called on Bill Barr to testify. I don't think the testimony comes until March 31. Is the media going to wait, though? Are they going to wait until that hearing when he comes out? And he explains what those four prosecutors did, how it wasn't appropriate, and then it's laid to rest? Well, what will happen even between now and March 31? If you look at the Democrats' recent track record, they're not inclined to wait around for evidence. They just go forward. They go forward with the smear campaign. It doesn't matter if it hurts the country, if it divides the nation. Politics of destruction. My father wrote in the Trumpet, "In America's civil war, neither side will win. Bible prophecy thunders a deadly message that an enemy nation will conquer us. We must wake up and repent for God to save us this time." Neither side is going to come out victorious. That's the thing. It's tempting, humanly, to join with one side over the other. But we're just both sides together. It's as if we're racing toward the cliff. And Ezekiel 5 talks about what we're facing just as soon as this temporary resurgence is ended. There's been positive news, as we've reported, with the economy, with some of the trade policies, the voter enthusiasm in New Hampshire. Not for Bernie Sanders or Buttigieg or Joe Biden, but for Donald Trump. That's a big takeaway from Iowa and from New Hampshire. For Donald Trump, the incumbent, to go in there without really an opponent, just like Barack Obama did in 2012, or George W. Bush in 2004, or Bill Clinton in 1996, or Ronald Reagan in 1984, all of these presidents that were in there 4 years, and then the second primary for them, it's just a rubber stamp. Nobody really shows up to vote unless it's Donald Trump. 118,000 votes. In New Hampshire, that compares, as you can see on your screen there, Obama had 49,000 in 2012. Bush had 53,000. Clinton had 76,000 in 1996. Reagan had 65,000 in 1984. People showing up, well, I guess I'll vote for him. It's a foregone conclusion. But then this year in New Hampshire, 118,000. That's some serious voter enthusiasm. People that see that this president has come under a relentless attack from his political enemies, they can't even wait 2 weeks before they start revving up another impeachment, another investigation. Here we go again. Well, in this short period that we have, like my father says in that March trumpet, it's an opportunity for us to draw near to God, to turn to Him in repentance. He says, though President Trump has made strides toward purging the government of radical Obama-era appointees, the nation is still sharply divided. America's temporary resurgence is giving people a window to repent, but that window won't stay open long. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
My father has referred to the example of Steve Jobs a few times over the years at thetrumpet.com and also to our students at the college. He obviously was a flawed human being in a lot of ways, but also a perfectionist and someone who had his ups and downs in business. There have been movies made about these books written about him, Becoming Steve Jobs. I forget who wrote that one, but of course, Walter Isaacson had perhaps the most famous biography about Steve Jobs. But there was a point in his life where he brought Apple back, the mid to late 1990s. He came back and he was in a position of power and influence with the company. And the company experienced a real resurgence. And this commercial that we'll play from 1997, this really went a long way toward bringing Apple back as sort of a fresh, cool product. And of course, it remains even to this day. There's a few things in this commercial, in the script, that obviously are not something that we would support or endorse, about being a rebel, for example, or a troublemaker. But the part about being different or just thinking different, I think that that does certainly inspire God's people when you think about how that we're supposed to think in this world with Satan as its God. Here's this 1997 commercial for Apple, Think Different.
Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward. While some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
Think Different, it says there at the end of that that spot from 1997. I'm not sure that these misfits have necessarily pushed the human race forward. However, when you study the lives of influential human beings, you're almost always struck by the way that they think, that they don't settle for the status quo, that they do, in whatever way they do want to push things ahead. Now, when you look at the calling that God's given to us in His family, in His church, 1 Corinthians 1 talks about us being the lowly of the world. God hasn't brought the high and mighty into the church. Mr. Armstrong used to say he didn't bring all of the the well-educated and royal scholars into the church, but we're here to become like God, to think like God, to be educated like God. We might be lowly coming in, but we don't stay there. We go forward and strive for perfection. In becoming Steve Jobs, it says of its principal subject, it was the first step of a leader who would now progress only in steps, not by leaps and bounds. So he went forward, and my father's talked before about his focus, Steve Jobs' focus, and how he simplified things when he came back. He focused on four main products. He thought that they had spread themselves too thin. And so he focused on just making a good product. He was quoted as saying that he wasn't interested so much in starting a business. He just wanted to make a good product. The church, God's church, is producing several really fine products, whether you look at the website or the magazine that I keep referring to or the programs or the colleges and the opportunities that are there, as I keep telling the college students, they are physical and spiritual. They're there for all of us. If we're interested in delivering a message that will ultimately change the whole world, that will help the whole world to think differently, then this is the place to be. John 14 and verse 12, it says, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believes on me, the works that I do shall he do also." This is Christ speaking. "And greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father." Jesus Christ is alive. He's at the right hand of God. He's our advocate. He's our high priest. He's our intercessor. In my father's book, John's Gospel, The Love of God, it says, "We have greater means to reach around the world through television, satellite, publications, and mail distribution, and the internet." It says that enables us to do greater works than Christ could do. Despite our small numbers, Christ continues to bless our work with significant growth. I talked some on this yesterday. Mr. Armstrong blazing those trails, and then you look at the way that technology can take a message from a remote location, like in the West Midlands here in the UK, and take it right around the world live. Now, technology is a double-edged sword, and we're doing our best to try to minimize the negative influences of it on God's campuses. But there certainly are the positives as well that allow for this message to go worldwide, and more, it's going to gain more attention, of course, as we draw closer to the return of Jesus Christ. But my father's talked before about how important it is for our young people coming into God's educational program to really push themselves academically and to get to know their Bibles and to learn how to be skilled communicators. I just got an email from one of our alumni students. She was saying how that her boss called on her to put together a presentation and to deliver it before him and, I guess it was the board of some kind, important people with respect to the company. And as she was telling me, you know, I'm just a gal who went to Armstrong College for 4 years. But she gave the presentation. She was nervous, but she did really well. And she said after the fact that her boss just kept praising her. He couldn't believe how at ease and comfortable she seemed. And she said, "I just wanted to let you know that, because it's the education that we received at God's College that gets the credit." My father writes in The Last Hour, "What good is the message if it's not declared and taught? What a failure if we don't deliver our Father's message. What a calamity. Now is the time to be a witness for God. Now is the time to distribute." Ephesians 3:9 talks about dispensing with this message. We have the greatest message in the world. Look at what you see and read in the daily news cycle, like I covered in the first segment. So much of it is just noise. It's nonsense. It's fake. It's evil. So much of it is. And yet God's raised us up to declare his royal family message. Notice Isaiah 35 and verse 1. It says here, the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. Down in verse 8 it says, and an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools, shall not err therein. The highway that goes right to our God, the way of holiness, it's called. We're here to promote God and his law and his way of life. The Bible says that in the wonderful world tomorrow, people are going to come up to us, God's people, and say, teach us. Teach us your ways. Teach us the ways of God. We're going to show them the road. The road that goes right to the throne of God. As everyone on earth will have a personal relationship with their Creator. Isaiah 52 in verse 1. It says, awake, awake, put on your strength, O Zion, put on your beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and unclean. Shake yourself from the dust, verse 2 says, arise and sit down, O Jerusalem, loose yourself from the hands of your neck, O captive daughter of Zion. How beautiful, verse 7, how beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that brings good tidings, that publishes peace, that brings good tidings of good, that publishes salvation, that says unto Zion, thy God reigns. Didn't Mr. Armstrong bring good tidings to this earth? You talk about an innovative trailblazer. He didn't have all the flaws and the imbalances of someone like Steve Jobs. This was someone whose first desire, his greatest desire, was to serve and to obey God and to share the way of God with as many people as who would listen. In Isaiah's End Time Vision, my father's booklet, it says, anciently a messenger had to get on his feet to deliver the message. He often ran. The good messenger didn't talk about delivering the message. He just used his feet to get the job done. He just took off. When he delivered God's message, it was received by God's people with great joy. They knew he had beautiful feet. Because of the message, those feet were used to deliver. That's why God draws attention to the feet and says, they're beautiful. Because look at the message they're delivering. He says, God talks about beautiful feet for a very good reason. He wants his messengers today to deliver his message. Most people talk about doing God's work, but very few simply get busy and do the job. Only a few know God's message must be delivered by using their feet. It's so easy to talk about the work, to talk about the message. But how active and diligent are you in really throwing support behind the delivery of it, giving it to someone else? It says in verse 8, your watchmen shall lift up the voice, with the voice together they shall sing, if they shall see eye to eye, when the Eternal shall bring again Zion. It says, break forth into joy, sing together, You waste places of Jerusalem, for the Eternal has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. We're here to spread the Jerusalem vision. We're here to set our sights on Jerusalem and beyond. And here we've got exciting activities going on in Jerusalem, hopefully many, many more as we look to expand our operations there and to have more of a presence there, to have more of our staff there, more of our students, more alumni, just like we have them here at Edstone, just like we have it at Edmond, just like we have it at every regional office around the world. And of course, God's people, together with all of those offices, scattered about, but with one singular focus, with one mind, the mind of God, that really makes us different in this world. We have to think differently than they do in this world. We are not of the world, Jesus said. We're called out of this world to be different, to do God's work, to distribute God's products. We're the ones who see things differently. We're the ones who don't settle for the status quo. We're the ones who are changing the world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.